continuing this afternoon to explore, reflect on clear comprehension of non-delusion. A few days ago, I spoke about this from the perspective of recognizing how delusion operates. So beginning to get familiar with the ways that we misperceive experience. Misperceive experience, taking what is impermanent to be permanent, what is unreliable to be reliable, and what is not self to be self. Well, this is seeing that tendency in the mind to take something as permanent. I encourage noticing where it feels like something is stable, you know, noticing the attribution of stability, noticing the attribution of reliability, and kind of investigating that, being curious about it. Is it really stable? Is it really reliable, as the Buddha said? How long does that gratification actually last? These misperceptions, I think I said this the other day, these misperceptions are the flip side of what are often called the three characteristics, that all experience is impermanent, unreliable, and not self. That word characteristic makes it somehow perhaps seem like there's some thing out there that has a property of being impermanent. And while that may well be true, that's certainly what physicists tell us, that there's no stability in the objects in the world. The Buddha actually didn't use this word characteristic in relationship to the set, ways of understanding experience. Instead, he used a couple of different words. He said that we should cultivate the perception of impermanence, the perception of unreliability, the perception of not self. So he talked about these as being perceptions of experience. He also encouraged us to contemplate, observe these three. Be with, be aware of impermanence. Be aware of unreliability. Be aware of not self, the nature of not self. Observing the experience moment to moment, noticing these as aspects of experience. This pointing to the perception, to observing, to me really speaks to the Buddha's emphasis on, or the teachings of the Buddha, the emphasis on the experiential. What we are experiencing, that's what we can know, that's what we can observe, is our experience. My sense is that the Buddha wasn't so interested in some kind of a description of ultimate reality in terms of what's out there. But he was very interested in how our perceptions shape our experience. And the ways in which certain perceptions shape the experience of suffering. Tanisaro Bhikkhu put it this way. The Buddha's concern is not with trying to give an analysis of the ultimate nature of things outside. He's more interested in seeing how the behavior of things affects our search for happiness. Everything we experience is mediated by our senses and our mind. That's all that we can know, the experience that's arising here, the perceptions that are arising here. That's all that we can know. And that's where the Buddha pointed us to where freedom can be found, is in understanding that experience, understanding the nature of that experience, and understanding, recognizing the misunderstandings of the nature of that experience that lead us to suffer. When we misattribute permanence to things that are impermanent, to experience that is impermanent, ever-changing, not stable, when we attribute permanence to that experience, our minds tend to think there's some happiness that can be found there. We tend to cling. We tend to feel like, oh, I can land there. I can find some place to find happiness. There's some stability here. And as the mind begins to more deeply recognize and understand the instability, the unstable, the impermanent nature of experience, and by association, because things are impermanent, because experience is impermanent, try to keep using experience instead of things. Things makes it seem like there's something out there, and it's really just this like flux of sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, things going on in the mind. The kind of a corollary or a follow-on from the nature of experience as impermanent is that it is not reliable. Experience is not a reliable place to find lasting happiness. And that understanding, the understanding of the impermanent nature of experience, helps our mind to recognize the futility of clinging to impermanent experience, and not only the futility of it, but the way it makes the mind suffer, the struggle, the pain of that clinging. These understandings, or we could say the recognition of experience as impermanent, unreliable, not self, this can come, the conditions, some of the conditions for being able to see this, understand this at a deep level, is this establishment of mindfulness, the strength of wisdom and mindfulness together, coming together to see that truth, see that. In the other day, I pointed to the Bahia Sutta and how the Buddha pointed Bahia to the work being simply to a simple awareness. And the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard. Just simple being with experience. In a way, encouraging Bahia to establish mindfulness with this simple awareness. And then he said, when for you, this in the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the sensed is only the sensed, and the cognized is only the cognized. There is no you in terms of that. And so pointing to how that simple awareness creates the conditions for opening to this understanding. In this case, the understanding of not self. I see these three as very connected. It's like they're, it's almost like they're three sides of an understanding. And sometimes we might see experience more through the lens of impermanence. That might be the aspect of experience or the perception that is kind of up in terms of how we're observing experience. Sometimes it might be seen more through the perspective of not self. Sometimes more through the perspective of the unreliable, unsatisfactory nature of experience as a place to find happiness. And so sometimes these can be understood as insights, as the result of practice. That we keep observing in this simple way. And at times when there is a kind of a continuity or an establishment of mindfulness, sometimes it just takes a very simple pointing, either through maybe a guided meditation where, you know, somebody like the Buddha naming to Bahia, when you see in this way, there is no you in terms of that. Maybe the mind can, in that moment, if mindfulness is established, that can open the mind to the wisdom in that moment. And that being an understanding, an insight into that. It might be that we've heard teachings about impermanence. And that's kind of been come in earlier in our day or in our, you know, sometime from a long time ago. We're in our meditation and we're experiencing something, and perhaps I had this happen at one point. I was sitting in my meditation and I heard the words of my teacher telling me, notice your relationship to dukkha. And in that moment, seeing how the relationship to dukkha was being constructed. And so I was just sitting there observing my experience, and it was as if my teacher's instruction from, it had been a year before, that my teacher had said that to me. And I, in that moment, it was as if that was the instruction that was just right for that time. And it arose in the mind. Sometimes this can happen, and the mind can, through that arising of wisdom, see something in the moment. So sometimes these understandings come as direct experiential wisdom, knowing, pointing to a kind of a release of suffering. And yet the Buddha also encouraged us, the phrase I pointed to earlier, he encouraged us to cultivate the perception of these. Cultivate the perception of impermanence, cultivate the perception of unreliability, cultivate the perception of not self. our experience, conditioned experience, the arising of sight, of sound, of smell, of taste, of touch, thoughts in the mind, emotions, moods, ideas, beliefs, all arisings. Have the nature of being impermanent, unreliable, and not self. There is no experience, no conditioned experience that is not impermanent and unreliable and not self. You don't have to go looking for some special experience in which to see these. And so the Buddha points to, and like, given that all experience, every single moment of every day, these perceptions are available to be seen in every experience, the Buddha points us to kind of orienting or being curious about, can we cultivate that perception? Can we begin to see experience from that perspective? Today, I'd mostly like to focus on the cultivating the perception of impermanence. Spend some time with that one. So there's some ways that we might orient the mind towards cultivating these perceptions. Bringing, like, the reflection of, in this case, impermanence into the mind. And letting the mind kind of remind itself regularly. Yes, things are impermanent. The Buddha encouraged this through the use of reflection. There's one teaching, the five subjects for frequent recollection, where we're encouraged to regularly reflect. I am of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. I am of the nature to sicken. I have not gone beyond sickness. I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond dying. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. There are five subjects for frequent recollection. Those first four are directly related to impermanence. The fifth is related to the understanding of karma, of conditionality. But he encouraged us to bring this thought into our mind, just to remind us, remind ourselves regularly, this is true. This is at an ordinary level, in a way, we're exploring this truth here, the aging, sickness, and death things in our world. This is more everyday kind of reflection on impermanence. And yet it can be very powerful. This is kind of using our cognitive, our wisdom to, you know, remember this. It's so easy to not remember this. I'm really finding this time with this virus is such a valuable time for this kind of contemplation. It's so up. It's so obvious that none of us are immune from this, these truths. And so we can reflect, we can take it in through our intellect. And as we use that kind of reflection, cultivating our mindfulness, it may be that from time to time, there can be a deeper penetration of that wisdom. It's like we're reminding ourselves of the truth of that, the impermanent nature of experience. And in the cultivation of our practice, our mindfulness, from time to time, we may have enough of a continuity of mindfulness to more deeply see the actual truth of impermanence. This can happen at ordinary levels. It can happen at very deep meditative levels. At one point on a retreat, I was using this kind of contemplation regularly. You can use it in many ways. I was kind of contemplating or noticing just as I went through my day. Yes, the day is changing. The sun was over there, now it's over here. You know, just kind of reminding myself of the way in which the mind does notice change. Noticing over the course of the 3 months at IMS, the way the leaves changed color, and then the leaves fell, and then the weather got cold. And so there's just like this keeping this in mind. This is holding this reflection almost as an intention to aim the mind towards understanding this nature of experience at a deeper level. So I had been exploring this for, I don't know, a few weeks. And I was a veggie chopper on this particular retreat. I was, in the kitchen every morning, and I was using this same practice at, you know, chopping the vegetables. I would be noticing how the vegetables changed, and this through the entire day. I would be there cutting up the zucchini. It's like, okay, this is a zucchini. It's a whole zucchini, and I cut it up, and it's like, okay, yes, it's now a cut up zucchini. And then I would get the casserole in which the zucchini was. And this is cooked zucchini. This is different. This is changed. Just kind of reminding myself of this. And then, you know, with a reflection on the process of it being consumed by the body and eliminated in waste. Just holding that in the mind. Now, this is not the insight into impermanence. This is a different thing. It's a conscious reflection. A knowing of, a kind of reminding oneself of this is change, so that we don't forget that change is embedded into the fabric of our experience. So in any case, while I was doing this exploration, one day I came in to the veggie chopping place, and the cook had usually put our vegetables in little buckets next to each of our stations. And, you know, we each had a little bucket to work with. And this time, instead, we all were going to be chopping chard. And there was a mountain of chard in the middle of the table. It was probably like 3 feet high, 4 feet high. It looked enormous. And I walked in there and just like, oh, my goodness, we'll never finish this in 45 minutes. My mind just, you know, kind of forgot to recognize this as, okay, this is just a thing, you know, this is just the mind doing this. And so it was, you know, kind of like there was a little bit of heaviness and weight to this. And I just started chopping my chard. And at some point, and I had my head kind of down, I think, and I was just doing, you know, grabbing some chard and chopping it and grabbing some more and chopping it. And sometime I looked up and the pile was gone. And it was a shock. It was actually a shock that it had disappeared. This was actually a little bit of a kind of an insight into impermanence. And the insight there, the way this was experienced, was the recognition that the mind had kept that image of the big pile there. It's like the delusion of that big pile was a thing, and it was permanent in my mind. It was stable. It was unchanging. And then when I looked up and it wasn't there, that bubble of delusion was burst. And that's sometimes the way the flavor of the experience of impermanence is, that it's a kind of the recognition in a way that we've and it's like we know things are impermanent. We know experience changes. And yet there's a way in which our mind at a very subtle level attributes some kind of stability to experience. And the insight into impermanence is like the bursting of that attribution of permanence. Like the mind sees it had been attributing that permanence. This is one way this experience of insight into impermanence can happen, that we actually see the way in which the mind had been fooled into thinking there was some kind of permanence there. There's different levels of impermanence, we could say. And I think they're all useful to reflect on, to hold in our mind and cultivate the recognition of the perception of impermanence. Certain levels we can't necessarily do that on a regular basis, but we can, like there's some vast cosmic levels of impermanence. We're told about the Big Bang, that the universe was kind of born in this explosion of rapidly spreading space and matter. And that over the billions of years, planets formed and suns coalesced and elements were forged in the stars. We can reflect on this, remember this, and actually I appreciate sometimes reflecting on this level of impermanence. It can help me to find some balance around the more ordinary levels of impermanence sometimes when I'm a little caught up in something or other. Just the recognition of the memory of the vastness, the vastness of change. And that at some point, billions of years from now, this planet will not exist anymore. Humans will not exist anymore. The human species is impermanent. This is natural. And so reflecting on the vast scales of impermanent, remembering that. And then the everyday levels of impermanence, the seasonal changes, the changes through a day, the contemplation on aging, sickness, death, the separation from what we love. This is a very valuable reflection. There's a kind of a story. I don't know if it's true or not, but some of you may have heard of Carlos Castaneda. Many of us in our teenage years were reading those books of Don Juan, and Carlos Castaneda wrote about his spiritual awakening through the Native American tradition. And at one point, Carlos Castaneda became a kind of a teacher in this tradition, and he was said to be having dinner with a group of people, and one of the people at the dinner said something like, "I just can't find my way to living a spiritual life. I just can't be in touch with it." And Carlos Castaneda is said to have said, "Reflect every day that you, your children, your partner, your parents, everyone you love, is going to die in no particular order, you will soon have a spiritual life. The simple reflection on remembering, I am of the nature to age. My children are of the nature to age. My partner, my parents, my siblings, of the nature to age, sicken and die. That can have a very profound effect on the heart. Bringing this contemplation into the mind can soften the heart and help it to become available to actually open to these understandings. And there's maybe we could say a deeper level of impermanence or a subtler level of impermanence, a more moment-to-moment level of impermanence. This level of impermanence is more available in the meditation, where we can actually start to see that every single moment is radically changing, arising and passing away, moment after moment. There's nothing that lasts for more, nothing that lasts at all. It's all in a continual process of flux. There's no thing there at all. It's just change unfolding. And this can start to be seen through the meditative mind. This level of change was pointed to in the suttas many places, over and over again. The definition, the very definition that I pointed to that first talk on clear comprehension brings this in. How does one exercise clear comprehension? Feelings, thoughts, perceptions are understood as they arise, persist, and pass away. Here, persist is not that something is stable, but that it's in a kind of a state of flux. There's an arising and a fluctuation and a passing away. This description of experience, feelings, thoughts, perceptions, understood as they arise, persist, and pass away, this is a very experiential description. That's how it feels. And at different times, it might feel like a feeling persists for a short time or a longer time. We might not actually notice it passing away, but again, the contemplation of impermanence might look in the meditative realm might be a kind of a recognition or a reminder to ourselves that things are arising, persisting, and passing away, even if we don't see all those pieces. Witness something arise, and then our mind gets distracted and goes to something else. We haven't seen the thing pass away or the experience pass away necessarily there. But then sometime later, we might recognize, wow, that thing that I was so, hooked on, it's gone now. And so that's a kind of a pointing to the contemplation of the impermanent nature, or the cultivation of the perception of impermanence, that we may not see it passing away or arising in the moment, but we can begin to cultivate the perception through recognizing, yes, it has passed away. I didn't see it arise, but here it is. I'm right in the middle of it. It wasn't there before. So this, not so much with a thinking about, but just as a kind of an orientation to understanding our experience. So this description of arise, persist, and pass away being very experiential, it's a little different in a way than the commentarial description of experience, that every single moment is an arising and ceasing. And they don't necessarily have to be counter to each other. But at the same time, I found for myself the pointing to how is the experience, like this experience of this feeling tone, it feels like it's lingering. It's just a subtle like hovering of that sensation and then noticing it passing away. Whether in that experience it's actually arising and passing really quickly and I'm not seeing that arising and passing. I think the Buddha really was pointing us to noticing what the actual experience is. What is the mind seeing in this moment? How is it seeing in this moment? Having that kind of having been told that teaching on this moment-to-moment kind of nature of experience, that every single moment is like split second, you know, everything, things are arising and ceasing. I kind of felt like if I was seeing something lingering, that I was not observing it properly, that I was doing it wrong. That the mindfulness wasn't strong enough, and that I needed to make it stronger in order to see it like the Abhidhamma described it. This ends up being an exercise in striving and judging oneself. At least for me, this was a part of that. And then in reading kind of the more experiential descriptions of the suttas, it's like, yeah, that's what it feels like. It feels like experience arises, persists, and passes away. I don't have to see it anything other than the experience that's happening. And so this kind of cultivation of the perception of impermanence, to overlay some idea about what the perception of impermanence is supposed to look like, rather how is impermanence being seen now? How is it being recognized? Over and over again, the Buddha pointed to noticing experience as it arises. It's arising and passing. Encouraged us to notice this around the sense experience. He encouraged us to notice it around feelings and perceptions, the aggregates, the bodily experience. It's in the Satipatthana over and over again to notice the impermanent nature of experience. And again, some of this may be an orientation towards the holding it as a contemplation, as a reflection. And some of it may be actually seeing at the insight level the impermanent nature of experience. Seeing it at the insight level, it's a very powerful effect on the mind. And seeing too at these very refined level in the meditative kind of place of seeing that there's nothing that lasts for more than a split second. That level of seeing impermanence has a very profound effect on the mind, understanding nothing is worth clinging to. No experience lasts for long enough to find any reliable satisfaction out of it. So this understanding has a very powerful effect on the mind's tendency to cling, tendency to find some stability, to look for somewhere to land, someplace to be happy. This morning in the meditation Gil offered, he pointed in in a way, one of the ways I understood it, the pointing was kind of recognizing certain aspects of awareness as being spacious, still, silent. Those qualities in contrast to the dynamic influx experience that awareness meets. That can help us to disidentify with many of the ways that we suffer. In kind of being in that spaciousness, the stillness can help us to experience the flux of unreliability, the unreliability in that flux and the absence of a stable self in that flux. And yet the mind is kind of devious. It's looking for somewhere it can find something stable, and it can end up clinging to, attributing some stability to that spaciousness, stillness, and silence, reifying it, creating that as the place to land and to find rest of, oh, that's a place where I can land. The mind can create a thing, a concept, an idea out of that stillness, and like reify it, and then cling to that, go looking for that, suffer around it. Yeah, we can suffer around anything. And yet, fortunately, the practice, whenever we're suffering, something is being clung to. There's a misperception of some kind whenever we're suffering. In that, like clinging to the stillness of trying to get it, of feeling like, I've got to get that stillness in order to see the impermanence, the suffering that might happen there. That's a kind of a signpost, or a kind of a warning flare that says, hey, you know, delusion's happening. Something's being clung to. Something's being misattributed here. We might explore the possibility too of being with the stillness itself, being with the spaciousness, and understanding it too is impermanent. Nowhere to land. The mind so wants somewhere to land. So wants something to land on, to find some kind of rest. And we get a taste of rest with the kind of stillness sometimes. We get a taste of that rest, and then we like go searching for that rest. There's a deeper kind of ease that happens as we maybe come into alignment with the nature even of that awareness. of mindfulness, of consciousness as impermanent, in flux. Joseph has a story, an analogy. I have heard it from Joseph. I don't know if it's his analogy or if he heard it somewhere else. He says that the practice is kind of like skydiving. When you first start, kind of excited to be going up in the plane, maybe, and like, you know, oh, I'm going to do this thing, and so there's some interest, and yeah, you're there, and then you know, you actually get to the point of like having to like jump out of the plane. there's some like, you know, discomfort with that. There's a sense like, okay, I've got to just trust here. I've got this parachute. I got to trust the parachute. And then, you know, you jump out of the plane and there's this falling. And maybe at first the falling, you know, maybe it's a little scary, but then there's the remembering and the trusting of the parachute, and you're falling, and there's an exhilaration and a kind of delight there. But then you realize you don't have a parachute. There's no parachute. And the mind like reels with, and this is this place in practice when we kind of get, there's nowhere to land. You know, nothing's permanent. It's so just so uncomfortable. Our mind so wants that. And so, you know, there's this falling without the parachute. And then Joseph says, you realize there's no ground. You don't have a parachute, but there's no ground. There's nowhere to land. There's endless slipping through experience. Nothing stable. Nothing the same for more than an instant. It is only the mind not aligning with that that creates the suffering of it. Our minds relax really deeply when they align with this nature, with the nature of experience as impermanent, unreliable, and not so. And yet it takes some It takes a lot of trust. It takes a lot of willingness, courage, and patience. To find that alignment. To let go into that alignment, I think is a better way to put it. To let go into that alignment. It's a letting go. It's not a construction. So let's just sit for a while.